There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long-term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything. It's Farrell on the bench in the biggest way possible. Hanging out. The bad seed, the broken day, the bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad others, bad taste, bad life, bad dude, bad breath, bad attention, bad vibes. We are live in the Farrella Palatial, right across the river and through the woods from where Granny likes to steal my chrome cushy flower when she's drinking JMO in New York City. The Big Apple. Ooh. People dressed in plastic bags, directing traffic, some kind of fashion shake it up should do. But all my friends that come around, flat to party up, rats on the west side, bed bugs uptown, what a mess this town's attached. My brain splattered all over Manhattan, should do be shake out. Hey, what's gigging? It's Farrell with Mafia tonight. And we've already seen the Heat win game two. Unbelievable performance again by the Dragon, Dragic. He dropped 25 on him, whatever it was. They couldn't stop him. He hit a bomb three at the end that basically daggered him. And then he hit another J on the wing. I mean, they were saying Celtics, I'm getting reports now that they were arguing in the locker room after the game. And I think that was about, my guess is that no one was guarding Dragic. I mean, they just didn't take him seriously as the guy's sticking bombs in their face. And every shot he took was uncontested. It was just like easy money. They just left him room, and he killed him like single-handedly by himself. I thought the Celtics had – they got outscored 37-17 in the third. That's all you need to know. Up 17, and they lost. They blew the lead. They quit playing. They look like they're toast now because they're arguing amongst themselves. Once a team snaps and starts yelling at each other, you know they're in big trouble. The Browns are up at the half on the Bengals. We'll get into that. Baker Mayfield actually looks good for the first time in a year and change. And the Islanders, Tampa, one in the third.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the Heat went at 106-101, and Pharrell on the bench with you. So I just, it's just unbelievable to me. Dragic, 10 of 19, hit three threes, three boards, five dimes, and committed one foul. And this guy was literally, I don't know if you saw it, but he was shooting layups. He was shooting reverse layups. He drives in deliberately, drags, then goes. And he just holds on to the ball. You know who he reminds me of? Mafia is Brendan. Never picks up his dribble and just keeps waiting until you step the wrong way 1 foot or lean the wrong way 1 foot. And then he is right down the pike and right in your face. And then he goes down low and makes layups, reverses, and he'll go down and hit a baseline floater. He'll like go down to the baseline and pop a floater up with one arm, or he'll go into the lane and do a teardrop right in your face, right in front of guys that are 6'7", 6'8", 6'9". He'll go right in their face and make those buckets. I mean, this guy, and he's wearing a knee brace the length of his leg. I mean, I've never seen a brace bigger than that in my life, literally from his Achilles all the way to his onions. And the guy is, you know, as slow and white as they come, and he's torching these dudes, torching these, you know, pure athlete flyers that the Celtics have on their team. Brown, smart, great defender, first team. Tatum is long and fast and unbelievable. Kemba Walker's as fast as a fly. And then what happens? You got some slow old white guy torching you? I mean, honestly, he's like a guy at the rec league. I mean, he's as slow as me, but he's just doing people. I've never seen anything like it. Have you ever seen how a guy that small will go down into the trees and hit little hooks and little floaters, Moth?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it just shows you the veteran play versus the young play, you know, because even some of the guys, even guys like Butler, sometimes you look at the shots or Bam, the shots they take, you're like, dude, come on, that's not a good shot. Like, there really isn't many shots that you see Dragic take that you really question it and say, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Like, he just makes the smart veteran play every time. Like you said, he's always moving, always, you know, keeps his dribble looking for something. And he's got such great core vision that, you know, he just drags you, and all of a sudden, either you fall asleep on him or you give him that respect, and then he passes to someone else and they're wide open. He's just playing incredible for them. And it's the difference in the series right now, because not just his scoring, but just that veteran presence. Because look at that third quarter, that 20-run, you know, 20-point difference that Miami made up. Boston turned it over seven times in 12 minutes. Miami turned it over like once.
Dude, they turned it over 20 times in the game. I think the final number was 19. I think it was, let me get this right. I got to go down to the other side. I think it was 20 turnovers. Let me see if I got that right. 20 turnovers. And that is just crazy. I mean, they turned the ball over so much. The Celtics, like, it was embarrassing. I mean, some of the turnovers were so bad. Like, one of them was Tatum at the top of the key throwing it to Brown on the baseline wide open, and he throws it out of bounds. I mean, they were just terrible holding on to the ball. I got to be honest with you. I watched the game. They did nothing right. They literally did nothing right from the third quarter on. I mean, they absolutely folded up shop, turned the ball over. They couldn't make free throws. They couldn't make shots. Even though they came back, they still gave up the lead. Like, they came back all the way back a couple times and got within two or tied. I think it was tied at one point. I could look up the numbers exactly, right? So let's do that. I just want to go to the fourth quarter and tell you exactly what happened. So here they are in the fourth quarter, and it got to the point where I know it was like 92 apiece, right? Next thing you know, it's 95 all is when they tied it. 95 all, they tied it. And that was after the Celtics had a lead of 95-93. They were down. At one point, they were up 91-89. It was tied at 89s. And then, you know, this is after, you know, they were down 87-81, 87-80, whatever. They were down before that, even worse, right? So, like, at the end of the third quarter, it was so bad that, like, they had blown the lead, right? And so, I mean, it was just sickening. Like, they were up, what was it? At the end of the third, they were down, it was 84-77. But at halftime, I don't even know what the score was. It was like, okay, so at the end of the second quarter, right? You go to the end of the second quarter, it was 60-47. So they were up 13. And then they made it even bigger. It was 64-49. 66-52. 67-52. I mean, my God, they just folded up shop and went home. They went in the locker room and allegedly started arguing when it was over. And they should have been arguing because they were so bad. They were so bad. The turnovers and the missed shots and the bricks they were laying. It was just absolutely it was unbearable to watch it. I just couldn't even bear to see it. Like, I thought Boston would win tonight and tie it up. I actually thought that it would be a series, right? And you know I'm a Miami fan, so you know I like the Heat. You know I think the Heat are going to win the series. I said all that on Coast to Coast on Sports Grid. But I didn't think that it'd be this easy. Like, these first two games, I mean, what? They came back in both of these games. They were down 12 at the end of the third in the first game. And then they were down, you're down 12, you come back. And then they're down 15, 17 points, I think, at one point, and they still came back and won the game. What more do you need to know that the Celtics can't win? You're up 15, you're up 17, you're up 12. It doesn't matter what their lead is. It's not safe because the Heat are so far in their heads. They are literally renting a penthouse in their skull. They are renting a penthouse for $20 million a month upstairs in their heads. It's unbelievable. Like, Mafia, you cannot deny now that they are screwed. How are they going to win 4 out of 5 against that team? The team that goes after every loose ball, that goes after every rebound, that hustles, that plays defense on every possession, that plays a zone defense that literally forced Boston to stop scoring completely. I mean, they literally stopped scoring completely. So how are they going to lose 4 of 5?
Especially when you have, you know, a very telling trend for the Celtics team throughout these playoffs. Obviously, they won a lot of games, so they're a good team. You know, they've gotten by on their athleticism, their, you know, talent, all that. But I'm mad at myself for not betting this tonight because it didn't hit last game, so I got off it, and I shouldn't have. Is that up until game one in this series, every single third quarter, the Celtics have lost. And what happened again tonight? They lose the third quarter by 20 points. And that just shows you, you know, again, difference between veterans and young players, or maybe even just the difference in coaching between Spoelstra and Stevens. Because when you're coming out of halftime, when you're making adjustments to what the other team's supposed to have done the whole first half, and you're changing your, you know, game plan to match and beat what they're doing, that's where Boston is getting killed in every single game of the playoffs except one.
God, it's unbelievable. So Adebayo had 21 and Robinson had 18, all of them six threes. Butler had 14, Crowder had 12 and 3 threes. Dragic 25 with 3 threes. Hero had 11 with a three, but Hero did more than that. Hero had 9 boards and 5 dimes. The guy had 9 boards. How big is he? 6'1", 6'2", whatever, 6'3". How big is Hero at best? I mean, I have to see. Like, he's 6'5", they're saying. He's 6'5", really? Does he look 6'5" to you? That guy plays like he's 6'9". I mean, it's unbelievable the way he shoots. Robinson and Hero shoot like, I mean, these two white boys are just filling it up. Like, no one can stop them. And they get all these loose rebounds. and they go after loose balls and dive out of bounds and make saves and throw it behind their back. And I mean, the Heat made every single play. They were diving for balls. All you need to know who's going to win a game is who's diving for balls, who's going after every rebound, who's scrapping, who's playing D, who's hitting shots. And I mean, they follow their shots. They move the ball. They do everything right. And the Celtics stand around seeing if somebody else can make the shot.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
All right, Pharrell on a bench. The Browns are going to, I guess, try for it on fourth and goal from the two. They ran up the middle on first down, second down, third down. He threw to the corner to Beckham, but he threw it poorly, and Beckham dropped it. It was too wide. He couldn't have made the catch. And then now it's fourth down. The clock got down to 1 second, and they called a timeout before they got a delay of game. I don't know if they're going to go for it now. They're in a timeout. So anyway, what happened was the Lightning got a delay of game power play off of Taves. Again, his second delay of game in the game, and they couldn't score. And here's the deal. They literally, I mean, they might, but they have not even come close to scoring. They've literally outshot the Islanders like 4-1, but they cannot score a goal on this guy, Varlamov. He owns him, and he's just eating it. He's just eating the puck every time. And they can't score on him no matter what. Power play, 5-on-5, it doesn't matter what it is. And you can just feel it coming. You can feel it coming. I'd be surprised if the Islanders don't score and win this game. There's 3 minutes left. And then one way or the other, I just feel like they're going to score and they're going to be on to game seven. And then at that point, I think the Islanders are going to win because they're so far messing with the Lightning these last two games. It's not even funny. And you can just smell it coming. Like, I don't know. I'm watching a game of total domination where the Islanders are doing everything right and the Lightning are doing nothing right. And Vasilevsky's just on his heels. He's barely making saves. One of them got behind him and it was literally on a goal line and it didn't go in. Now I just got to switch back to the football game. Still in a timeout, apparently. But I'm just not sensing anything. Like, I hope I'm wrong and that, you know, they've had a million shots and they just can't score. I mean, they are literally, remember the last game they lost in double overtime, 2-1. This is the same thing. This is the same game, deja vu. 2:22 left. I think they're going to call it a timeout or something here. But all I know is they just can't score. They're completely shut down by the Islanders and Varlamov. They have figured out the Lightning and the Lightning can't score. So they better get a goal or they're going to lose this series. Because if they go to seven, Mavi, do you think they'll lose in seven? They always do.
Very well might have. The way that they've been, yeah, like you said, they have that history of choking, and a lot of these guys are the same guys that have been there, and it would just fit right that narrative, especially the fact that, you know, they had control of this. I mean, this has been a completely different series these last two games, and I know they've had their chances, and they've had a ton of shots in this game. It's not like they're just laying down and dying or anything, but all of a sudden, Varlamov has gotten hot. He's shutting them down, and they just can't seem to find the net anymore.
So they're fourth and goal from the two. I don't know if this is a good decision because it's a close game. It's 21-13. Why not get the points and go up 24-13 instead of – because you've already had three bad plays. You've already had three bad plays, so you're 0-3. Now, so what they did was they went for it. I missed it. So they went for it and failed. So now the Bengals have the ball at the 1-inch line. So obviously that's what happened. They stopped them because I was watching the hockey game. So I just turned it on. Bengals have the ball, first and 10 from their literally their goal line. So they obviously stopped the Browns at fourth down. Did I not just say they're not going to score? Kick the points. I was like, kick, because you're not going to score. You're already 0-3. You couldn't get 1 yard. Now you go for it. Like, at some point, don't you realize you're not going to get it in because your plays have been so bunk that you just got to kick the field goal? Instead, they went for it, failed, and now the Bengals have the ball again. And it's 21-13. I'm telling you, that was a bad decision. Mafia, if you're first down, you run it up the middle, don't gain a yard. Second down, you run it up the middle, you lose a yard. Now it's a third and goal from the two. You throw it out to Beckham wide. Boom, you're 0-3. You going to go for it again on fourth down?
Probably not, but then again, do you really trust kickers right now in the NFL? Doesn't matter how much the distance is. I don't know if I trust anybody to put foot to ball and get it through the uprights.
That it's literally from the two-yard line. So it's a 24-yard field goal. So, I think they can make a 24-yard. You start going 33 and on, then you got problems. But a 24-yarder is like the old field goal. It's like the old extra point. It's so close, it's not even funny. I mean, these are pro kickers. From 24 yards, that's a joke. When you start talking about 33, 40, 45, 50, 55-yarders, then you got problems. But I don't think most of them miss a 24-yarder. I really don't. Not even. I mean, it would have been at the 2-yard line, 7 yards back, 19-yarder. It would have been a 19-yard field goal.
I agree with you. I would have kicked it, got the points, because you're too close right now. You're within one score. At least then it makes a 2-score game and gives you a little bit of breathing room just in case this team, you know, catches you for a quick TD somewhere.
But obviously, I hate to be right, but they failed and they didn't try it and they went for it on fourth and they failed just like I knew they would. I didn't even see the game. I was watching the hockey game. I turn it back. They got the ball at the 1-inch line. That means they stopped them. So they didn't go for the extra point, because if they would have gone to the extra point, it would have been first and 10 of the 25. Right.
Right.
So bottom line is they didn't get it done. And it was a stupid decision by Stefanski. And I'm sure Baker Mayfield must have talked him into it, and it didn't work. So I don't know what the play was they ran, but it didn't work. I can look it up. I just don't feel like it. I'm too busy. But the funny thing is, they can't score. That's the point I've been trying to make to you. Like, they almost scored 7 times in the overtime and double overtime the other night, but they never scored, did they?
That one was close. I don't think Varlamov didn't even know it was coming, and somehow he still stops it.
They can't. Yeah, they can't. I mean, you mean that pad save? They, you know, that was, I think that looked a lot easier. He didn't even see it, but that was, no. You know, the guy never got the puck up in the air. So yeah, they can't score. They just can't score on him. I mean, they might. I won't deny they might, but they haven't. So all I know is they haven't scored, and now they're going to, you know, there's a minute left. They're going to go to overtime, and believe me, we obviously the next goal is going to win this game, and all the Islanders have to do is win this game, and I literally think then they have to be, in my opinion, they have to be favored in game 7, because it doesn't matter who's favorite either. I know that FanDuel will have a favorite. They'll probably favor Tampa, but that's a mistake. The Islanders should be favored because they've come back from 3-1 down. They've beaten them. It'll be double overtime and then overtime. And then they literally beat them in 2 overtime games in a row. They have to be favored. I mean, because they've come back all the way back and beat them twice in overtime. And then if they get it done, they have to be favored in game 7. And if they aren't favored, just run to the window and bet on them. Because, you know, they're obviously in their heads, and they're going to beat them. You can't even deny it. The Lightning have shot, literally, if I pulled it up, you'd puke. They were up at one point in this game 24-6 in shots. 24-6 in shots. Now they called a penalty with 24 seconds left in the game, so they'll have 23 seconds to try to get a shot off. And then they'll have a power play at the beginning of the overtime. But it doesn't matter. We just saw them have a power play. They didn't get even close to scoring.
And we just saw them have a power play that carried over into overtime last game, and they didn't get it done.
They didn't get it done in that one either. So I just want to show you here.
Shots are 42-21 Tampa.
42-21. There you go. That's what I was looking for. 42-21. And, I mean, they've doubled them, right? So all those shots, look what it got them. One goal. And they did this in the last game. They did it in every game. They did it in every game in the series. They had shot that many shots. So it doesn't matter how much they shoot. if they don't go in. Just so you know, we're going to have Mike Blewett on next. And we'll talk football with Blue. Football full circle, you name it, is our boy Blue. So we'll talk to him later tonight in the second hour. Young Gelt Militia is on. Brian Geltzeiler from NBA Radio on satellite and hoopscritic.com. He's my boy. But here you go. They have it. And so how about this one? Again, it's the same penalty. High stick with blood, 4 minutes. So no matter what, they're going to have a literally 3 minutes and, you know, whatever, almost 4 minutes straight in the start of the overtime, sans 23 seconds. They're going to have literally like almost 4 minutes of power play at the beginning of overtime if they don't score right now. I mean, they're going to come out in the overtime. They're going to have, you know, 340 something of power play. They should try to win it right here. Get a shot off. What are you doing? They can't even get a shot off. Like, they can't pass. They pass it around so much that they never got a shot. There you go. They're going to overtime. They got no shots in that 23 seconds. You know why? Because they F around with the puck so much, this team. They pass it so much that they never get a shot off. That's what they did last night, the other night in the double overtime. They had 3 minutes in the overtime of power play, and they passed it around so effing much that you couldn't you can't make sense of it. Just take shots. You got to shoot the puck on net and get rebounds and punch them in. If you pass it around 15 times, what are the odds that the pass is going to get deflected and knocked out of the zone? I'd say your chances are way better to deflect a pass than they are to stop, let's say, 4 good shots and rebounds. You know how you score goals on power play? Shoot it, rebound, stuffer, boom. The guy can't make all those saves. If he's down on the ice after making one save, you beat him on the rebound. How did they score tonight? A long rebound, Hedman scored off the long rebound, snapped it right in past Varlamov. And that was a shot, rebound, snap. Boom. I'm telling you, you pass it around 5 or 6 times, bad things happen. Just bad things happen every time. You just keep passing it. You never shoot it. And then there goes the power play. And I'm telling you, if they don't score in those 3 minutes and 37 seconds that they have, almost 4 minutes of power play that they're going to have, 337, right? If they don't score in that 337, I will bet anybody that they're going to lose the game. I mean, because that's it. They got their chance right there. If they don't get it done, then you know they're going to puke and not win. And then they're going to lose game 7, too. It's Pharrell on the bench. All right, Pharrell on the bench. Mike Blewett hosts College Football Today and Pro Football Today on Saturdays and Sundays on Sports Grid, and previously Football Full Circle, and now he's blowing out with these two other shows, and you know he's watching this Bengals-Browns Thursday Nighter tonight, and you know, first of all, let's bring him in. Mike, I hope you're doing well. I was watching the Islander game with the Lightning. It's just been incredible. The end of the game was crazy, and the Lightning had a power play. They're going to have a 3.5-minute power play to start the overtime. It's 1-1. I was watching that, and I was watching a football game. So I saw them get down to the, you know, 1-yard line, whatever. First down, boom, nothing. Second down, they go back a yard. Third down, he throws to Beckham, incomplete. Fourth down, they went for it. I missed that play. They obviously went for it, and the Bengals stopped them. Then the Bengals got the ball, and they moved it out to whatever, the 11, and then Burrow got sacked at the 4 and fumbled, dropping back to pass, obviously. Something like that happened. I think Garrett recovered it, and then Chubb stuffed it in. Is that about right?
Yeah, on the fourth down play that they missed on, they gave it to Chubb again. He came up about a foot short. So they ran the ball 3 times down there and rushed a throw. But credit to Myles Garrett, he knocked the ball loose out of Burrow's hand, and they recovered that inside the 1-yard line and then punched it in with Chubb. So Chubb ultimately got the touchdown. He's been having a great night. The absence of Geno Atkins is having a major effect on this game.
So I actually saw you know, a lot of the plays in this game. And Burrow is 20 of 32 for 189 and a touchdown. I actually, even though they're down 15, I think the kids look pretty fantastic, all things being equal.
Yeah, I felt the same way when they played the Chargers just a few days ago. I think you're going to have some warts with the rookie quarterback, but he's been in a unique position here that despite all the lack of preseason games, which would have helped him, he has taken virtually every single rep in the offseason with this Zach Taylor offense. So I think he is going to look a little bit more polished, A, because he's a little bit older than a typical rookie quarterback, and B, because he's had so many reps as the first-team quarterback this offseason.
So they marched down the field after the Browns score, and they're in the red zone right now. They're down around the 10-yard line. That's impressive to me, Mike, that he just is unfazed by being down 15. They score here. They're down 8.
Absolutely, and a really good point, simply if for no other reason that he just turned it over too, Scott. So he's coming off a really bad turnover where he basically handed the Browns a touchdown. He comes all the way down the field. They're inside the 5-yard line right now, a big 3rd and 2 down here. I would imagine they'll be aggressive and go even on 4th if they don't get it here. But I like Burrow. I think we've seen enough in his 2 college seasons and now here that he's pretty unflappable. Whether or not the Bengals can be successful around him is a bigger question than whether or not he has the goods. And the Bengals score right here, touchdown. That is Giovanni Bernard, which hurts a lot of fantasy owners, Joe Mixon fantasy owners, but nonetheless, Gio Bernard goes in for the score.
There you go. So I have to ask you, on the other side of the ball, this is the first time I'm willing to say in a year and change that Baker Mayfield has looked good in a pro football game.
I agree, but we're also talking about a depleted defensive line, no Mike Daniels, no Geno Atkins. So I think the improvement along the offensive line is helping. And you're talking about a Bengals team that you and I have talked about this during the offseason as well. It's still not a particularly talented team. They're not that deep, especially defensively. We like some of the weapons they have on offense. And their best player on defense is out. So this is a Bengals team coming off a short week with a rookie quarterback without their best player. And Baker looks good. I'll give him some credit. But there are mitigating factors to how high I would rate his performance.
I have to tell you, though, like in reality, when I'm watching the Bengals, who are a joke, and the Browns are a joke number 2, I got to tell you, if you didn't know any better and you were, let's say you'd hypothetically never seen a game before and you were like, I'm going to watch Thursday Night Football. The first thing I would say is, wow, this Bengals quarterback's pretty good. And you wouldn't know. Let's say you didn't know he was a rookie. You'd be like, wow, he's really good. And then, boy, this Browns quarterback looks really good. So I'm surprised that, to be honest with you, because I think the Bengals and Browns are both so bad that I even said today on the show on Coast to Coast, I'm like, when two bad teams get together, it's usually a really good game. And I think this is the perfect example of it. I think they both look well. I think the Bengals look better with AJ Green and with Boyd, with a quarterback actually that can play. Then I got to tell you, they look better with this kid than they did Dalton. And you can't even argue it.
Yeah, not even close, especially Boyd, who, you know, they had Boyd and John Ross got over 80% of the snaps just a few days ago. We'll see how it tracks tonight. But in addition to all the things you've said positively about him so far, he just ran for first down. He's got 4 carries for 20 yards. It isn't going to be a major component of his game, but we see this with a lot of the younger quarterbacks. They can move, whether it's in and out of the pocket or be able to scramble for a first down. They don't all have to be Lamar Jackson, but Burrow's athleticism is notable, even though he will clearly do most of his damage from the pocket.
So let me ask you, while we're in that division, you know, the Ravens kicked the Browns' ass, but the Steelers, I thought, Ben looked fantastic. for being out a year. And I mean, as soon as he got going a little bit and got like, he looked like the tin man at first. And once he got a little lubed up and got going, I thought his passes to Juju were both well done. I thought he threw the ball well to Washington. I even thought Johnson came back from being a buffoon early and fumbling the punt. And then when he threw the ball off of his back, the kid didn't know the play, obviously. But at the end of the day, I thought the kid Johnson ended up making some plays and kind of righting himself. What did you think of Ben and their offense now? Back to normal, it looks like to me, and their defense is sick.
Yeah, and I think it all clicked at that two-minute warning drive. They went to the two-minute offense right before the first half, and that's, to me, when it looked like they had turned the corner. They were losing to that point, and I thought that's when it came alive. A really important component for me in watching that game was how dedicated they were, Scott, to making sure that the entire wide receiving core was involved, all the way down to the rookie Chase Claypool. I thought Ben did an excellent job of spreading the ball around. Juju had a really good game. As you said, Johnson sort of bounced back from struggles early in the game. Washington was involved, caught a touchdown, an important touchdown, right before the first half. And Chase Claypool's one major contribution was an excellent tiptoe sideline catch. So you have four receivers there that we're talking about being involved as they open it up to potentially James Conner, if and when he comes back soon enough, and Jalen Samuels and other pass catchers. Eric Ebron got a couple of targets. I think it's safe to say that they have a cadre of weapons there that Ben can utilize. And as you said, for being out 364 days, he looked pretty darn good for the last 2.5 to 3 quarters of that game.
So Bernard's knee was down. They did not give him the touchdown, and now they had to go back to the first and goal from the one. But now they're going to call pass interference on the Browns. They made a tackle, got him back to the five, but now it's going to be first and goal from the one again for the Bengals. So one way or the other, they're getting the ball in. Let me ask you this question. And I want to get back to, I might bounce back and forth, but I had one college question I wanted to ask you, because I was talking to Joe Lisi last night. We were going through the games on Pharrell on the Bench, and I started talking to him about Duke and BC. And I said, and now here's what I said. I said, listen, I go, well, I think Duke looked pretty good against Notre Dame, and I think Cutliff's a good coach, and, you know, BC hasn't played. I think I'll go Duke and Durham against BC. I go, BC hasn't played. They'll probably suck. And then Lisi said, quote, don't let Mike Blewett hear you say that. He went to BC. He's not going to have it. And I said, well, screw Blue. What am I, like, worried about? Was he going to start a fight with me because I bet on Duke? So what do you think of what happened last night on the bench? We had a little Joe Lisi back in the Eagles from Chestnut Hill and going against the grain with Pharrell taking the Dukies at home -4.5.
Well, I clearly I'm a homer, so I'm going to go against you on this one despite our mutual love of the Pittsburgh Steelers. But it is BC's first game with a new head coach, Jeff Hapley, who's co-defensive coordinator at Ohio State. He's their new head coach. All of the reviews have been positive. They've got a new quarterback in there, a transfer from Notre Dame, who is likely to get some time. But keep in mind, Duke's quarterback is a transfer out of Clemson, Chase Bryce, who was prominently involved in a game a couple of years ago that helped them towards a national championship run. So do I think BC goes on the road and wins their first game under Jeff Hapley? I'd love to say yes, but just give me the points so I can ride the fence a little bit on this one. I think it's a tall order to ask him to go on the road and win his first game, but I'll take the touchdown right now that FanDuel has it.
All right, so how about so they sack Burrow at the 10, and he's just getting roughed up all of a sudden. But they just threw another flag for pass interference in the end zone. Like, how many flags are they going to throw? I mean,
this
are you kidding?
This one is very obvious, though.
Yeah, I guess both of them were obvious. Like, how bad are the Browns? That's obvious. He tackled him. So they're just asking to be scored upon. How bad are they that they stopped them on every play and then have two pass interferences giving them the ball at 1 yard line? How bad are the Browns? Like, just don't tackle the guy when he goes out to pass, make the play.
I think it's the other way around. It's the other way around, Scotty. They gave him the offensive.
Are you kidding?
They steamrolled him, so they gave him the offensive pass interference.
Oh, come on. He got mauled. I mean, that's a terrible call. You got to admit that's a terrible call.
That's crazy.
I mean, that really is a terrible
call. So.
All right, so let me ask you, now that, and I, you know, obviously the college football's back. I haven't heard your opinion. Respectfully, I got 2 minutes. What do you think of the Big Ten? Yeah. And I think the Pac-12's holding out. They're going to play, I think, in November. They're not going to matter for the playoff.
Probably true. And you also have to throw in the MAC and the Mountain West. I know they don't matter necessarily in the national championship race, but they're talking about coming back too. Look, the one thing I said all along is that I thought college was in the crosshairs and was going to face serious challenges just due to campus life. We're seeing that already. But I would say that I thought the Big Ten's announcement to cancel was a little premature. The optics for me, and I said this to you before, of Ohio State not playing, but the Bengals and the Browns, the two teams we're watching tonight, all the high schools, the University of Cincinnati, all playing, was really difficult for people to swallow. Ohio State's the most important football program organization in the whole state, and they weren't going to play.
Yeah,
and everybody else
crazy.
Was. It makes
crazy.
Sense for a lot of people.
Let me tell you one thing before I let you out of here. Today I found out, I saw today, and this is like no joke. It's legitimate that in Europe, in like Spain, Italy, Germany, France, I think England as well, like they added it up and they're literally right now having a second wave of this COVID and that it's double the amount of cases from when it was at its peak. It's double. Like it's coming back. And we think it's not going to happen here. We must be tripping. I'm very concerned when I saw those numbers because it all came from over there to begin with, or Asia, and then it was in Europe, and then it was here. It's so bad, and it's double there now than it was at its peak. So it is just not good news. Blue, I love you. Great job. Enjoy the rest of the game.
Thanks,
good
buddy.
Luck with college football today. Pro football today. I'll get you to the show again soon. Thanks, buddy.
Appreciate it. Talk soon.
All right. There's Blue. All right, so the Islanders killed off the 3.5-minute power play that was residual from the end of the third. So they're, you know, 15:40 left in the overtime. The Lightning couldn't score. They had two chances that were huge, both by Palat on the doorstep. One of them went behind Varlamov between his skates and the goal, and it slid across the blue crease. Behind the goalie, behind him, and it wouldn't go in. It missed. It slid right behind him across from one pipe to the other. And then the second one was a pass to Palat's stick on the side of the door, right on the doorstep at the post. And he missed it and tried to, it hit his skate and went behind the net. So Palat had two chances and, frankly, blew both of them. And then Nelson had a breakaway for the Islanders on a shorthanded, and Vasilevsky made the save with his shoulder. So the Islanders have had a chance, a better chance to score and win with Brock Nelson breaking in than the Lightning had with 3:37 of power play, whatever it was. They had 3:37 of power play, and literally, I mean, to me, I saw two good shots. That's all I saw. And the Islanders are so far in the heads. It's not even funny. Like, my opinion is this. Like, and I could be wrong. I'm wrong 30 times a day. But the deal is this. Two games in a row in overtime, they had a three-minute power play. They had a four-minute double minor. So 1 minute of it in both games was in the third. The other three were in the overtime. This one was even longer tonight than the other game the other night on Tuesday night when they lost in double overtime. This time they did it again, and they couldn't get a good shot. And they are going to lose this game because of it. How do you not score with two nights in a row in overtime? You get 3 minutes of power play and you spend the entire power play passing the puck around and not getting any quality shots, like really good shot attempts. They had two, but they were both bunk. They didn't go in. So it's unbelievable watching this game. It's, in my opinion, it's only a matter of time before the Islanders are celebrating.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.